Hey everybody, welcome to My Opium Movies. This week we are talking about The Mask of Zorro. Right around Valentine's Day, we decided to get a little spicy. I appreciate you guys listening. I appreciate you guys supporting us. I appreciate you spreading the word. For those of you who run podcasts, you know how hard it is to get good numbers, but our numbers have been going up, so I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
This week on My Opium Movies, we watch Mexican Batman. We saw 1998's The Mask of Zorro. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of My Opium Movies and Riff Run Center Problem. We've got...
Hello, this is Daniel. A frequent annoyance to Nick, and I also have been living in a cave for the past couple months.
I'm Matthew W. Quinn, who watched The New Adventures of Zorro on the Family Channel in the early 90s.
Ooh, really? Ooh.
Wait, yeah. The Family Channel?
Yeah, there was a show, TV, something called The Family Channel. They also had The Littles, the cartoon about those elf people living in the walls.
Did angry ticks ever fire out of your nipples?
There you go. Rejected.
Not that I'm aware of. Then again, I don't remember everything.
Oh, boy, there you go.
He's referencing a very obscure thing.
I knew he was referencing something. I decided to play along with it.
Yeah, there you go.
So Matt's not sure if he remembers whether or not ticks fired out of his nipples. Moving on. So this is Zorro. This is the 41st Zorro movie?
I don't even know. I mean, I know there were a bunch of silent Zorros, and then there was a TV show that Disney produced back in the 50s or 60s.
Yeah, I mean, and It's a huge deal. It was invented by an American guy named Johnston McCulley, I think. Is that how you say it? He's, kind of a pulp figure before the DC characters are created, but he's very much like a Batman-esque figure. Or The Shadow, or any of those kind of early pulp guys.
Well, traditionally, when Bruce Wayne's parents were shot, they were leaving a showing of The Mark of Zorro.
That's right. Kind of a doff to the cap. It's set in Los Angeles and Alta California, generally before the Americans get their hands on it, though at this point it kind of straddles that.
Yeah, this one, I think the Mexican War is starting already, and the sequel, which probably sucked because it heard it did, it takes place in early American California.
Yeah.
So, but the beginning of the movie takes place during the revolt against Spain.
That's correct. But yeah, so that's kind of what it is. We are introduced at the beginning to a kind of very Bond-esque, this is the previous mission kind of scene, which is appropriate because it's directed by Martin Campbell. I want to say he's a great director. He's a hit or miss director who's directed some of my favorite movies and some pretty mediocre to bad movies.
What else has he done? I remember this. I remember Goldeneye.
Didn't he do Casino Royale in 2006?
Yes, he did.
Casino Royale, oh my.
Yeah, he also did Green Lantern in 2011.
Oh,
he also did Vertical Limit in 2000, which we will probably get to eventually. He did that Foreigner movie this 2017, which was fine. That's the one with Pierce Brosnan and Jackie Chan.
What movie was this?
Jackie Chan is like a terrorist or something.
Yeah, called The Foreigner. It's completely forgettable. And you'd think him working again with Pierce Brosnan. It's Pierce Brosnan, Jackie Chan. That's a great setup for something. It just turned out to be a nothing movie. So a lot of low points, a lot of high points. I think GoldenEye and Casino Royale are two of the best Bond movies. So, and I think this movie is, not that I was afraid to come back with it. I just had good feelings about it, so I wasn't expecting much. And then it turned out to be as good as I remembered, so great.
See, one of the biggest memories I have of this movie, and Nick's probably going to go ahead and look at me here, it was on a band bus.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, a bus with all the marching band kids, where we were watching this movie, and we got to the scene with the tortured prisoners, and a whole bunch of the girls on the bus were like, oh, this is too offensive, and then they switched over to some dumb movie about a... woman who was like a diver on a horse, like ride a horse off a diving board into water, and at one point she went blind because The goggles do nothing.
Oh, really? I have no idea what you're talking about. That sounds awful.
It was, and
there must have been some sensitive souls if that bothered them that much.
And well, everyone else on the bus was like, "What the fuck is this shit?" And of course, one of the chaperones had to explain, "Well, there were some people who just didn't like Zorro, and it was disturbing them." Like, fucking hell! If this bothers you, then
don't watch Hostel.
Don't watch Sallow. I've seen Sallow twice.
Oh man.
So there you go.
I mean, I'm telling you, man, I'm a teacher though, so like the last thing you want is parents to complain. There's a whole bunch of like old fuddy duddy like parent types who don't want us to show any movies anymore. So
yeah.
I mean, it sucks, but although funny enough, I'm almost positive I also saw this on a band bus. So there you go.
Back in those days, they had VCRs on the bus.
Oh, they sure did. I'm sure I also saw, similarly, National Treasure 1,000 times.
Oh, sure.
That's a band bus kind of movie.
Mm-hmm.
Our band bus really liked the animated Transformers.
The
though,
Mummy
so.
Returns was a big band bus movie.
Oh, yeah. The original Mummy, too.
Yeah.
I mean, my band director was like a movie guy, so he just had hundreds and hundreds of movies for us to go through. But anyway... So apparently this movie, I guess our first little twist to this is directed by Martin Campbell, starring a pretty solid cast of Antonio Banderas, Anthony Hopkins, Catherine Zeta-Jones. Even the bit actors later are excellent. Though I will say we should mention the original casting. Spielberg produced this, and it was going to – well, originally. He didn't in the long run. But it was going to be with a guy named Mikhail Solomon and Robert Rodriguez as directors.
Ooh, there you go.
And originally, the lead, Don Daiga, instead of Anthony Hopkins, was going to be Sean Connery. Sean Connery.
So it's Mexican James Bond and Mexican Batman.
But let's not forget, it's not like Anthony Hopkins or Catherine Zeta-Jones are Mexican. They're both from Wales. So...
Yes, Catherine Zeta-Jones, that was a bit of a surprise. That was just probably the first movie I ever saw her in, and I actually thought she was Mexican.
Your voice is getting worse and worse.
I'm Sean Connery, dang it.
All right.
No.
There was Mexican Batman and his evil goatee dude who's after his wife.
Who looks a lot like Mexican Snape.
Looks like the original emperor from the first Dune.
Yeah, a little bit.
Like that beard.
Don Raphael. I'm blanking on his name now.
Stuart Wilson's the character actor.
Jose Ferrer, I think, was the guy who played the Emperor in Dune, right?
Yeah, he does look like a little bit like Jose. And by the way, Stuart Wilson was originally cast as Armando Sante, but he was doing that Odyssey movie that also came out in 1998.
Oh, I remember that.
I remember that, too.
That's the one that I saw in school when I was in school. The one Armand Asante plays Homer, or plays Odysseus, right? It's got Chris Lee, and it's got Vanessa Williams, I think. Bernadette Peters, I think.
Oh, yeah,
Vanessa
Bernadette Williams. Peters.
Yeah, Vanessa Williams is Calypso.
Yeah, that's right.
No, Bernadette Peters was the leader of the Lotus Eaters, if I remember correctly. I forget who played Calypso, but she looked like...
I'm pretty sure it was Vanessa, it was a black woman, I remember that.
Yes. It was a supermodel, I think.
Vanessa Williams was Calypso.
Okay, there you go. Who played Penelope?
Greta Scacchi?
Huh.
She was in Emma, Age of Innocence, The Player, Presumed Innocence, White Mischief. Nothing. I couldn't tell you. I couldn't pick her out of the crowd.
Wait. Go back to White Mischief? I mean, is that just what we're doing here?
I'll tell you all you need to know. She was married to Vincent D'Onofrio from 89 to
93. Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So she's got some heat to her. So let's do the cold open first and then give the plot of the rest of the movie. Okay? So the cold open is you teach world. You know what this is. This is the Mexican Revolution.
Yeah, it's
1820s.
Yeah, it's the end of the rule of Spain and Mexico. Like Santa Anna, which I didn't know he was active this early. His army is just outside of town. There's an angry mob of peasants besieging the royal governor in his palace. And they're going to execute some people just for last-minute spite. And then these two little thief boys are watching. And then Zorro shows up.
And the kind of, I guess, basic idea is that they're going to execute these innocent peasants as a way to draw him out of the crowd.
Yeah. Which he gloriously does. Like, he uses his bullwhip to grab the six rifles at once, and they end up shooting the sergeant like six times.
That's right.
Yep. And it's awesome. I mean, so many of the action set pieces in this movie are just... People these days are all about The Mummy, like, oh man, this is the greatest thing ever. It's 1999's The Mummy. This is as good as The Mummy when it comes to adventure scenes.
Well, but it's also, again, I will give this above The Mummy in some aspects, because there's no CGI nonsense that ever comes out, right? There's a lot of incredible practical effects throughout. And I mean, to Matt's earlier point, they did their historical research, a lot of it. Like, the idea that the Dons would come back is kind of absurd, but, like, they get their Hobsbawm-style social banditry thing down. They get Santa Anna and the timetable right. Like, they very specifically put it in a certain time period. They stuck to that time period, and there isn't any sort of, like... The thing that this kept reminding me of was Wild Wild West, but there's no technology nonsense. This is all very practical, very down-to-earth. I thought that was awesome. So there's supposed to be this execution of this handful of prisoners, but dressed in a like a Franciscan habit with the hood pulled up. Zorro is in the crowd. Like you said, he whips and destroys people and super-duper kills this Spanish officer.
Yeah, and then he carves the Z into the Spanish governor's throat.
That's right. But, like, Zorro had his mark. Like, there's this really kind of neat, interesting scene where the kids are cutting holes in this tarp or this canvas so that they can see into the execution. And they're like, we're looking for Zorro. And the whoever owns this carriage is like, Zorro's already here. And there's a Z cut into the wall behind them, which is kind of neat. But the whole notion, then, is that Zorro has been set into this trap. And everything had been planned out, but the kids save him at one point. He kind of uses his sword, and there's some really good fencing in this. And it's a stuntman that every so often turns temporarily into Anthony Hopkins with the dye job and then fades back into the crowd.
Yeah, because this is the original Zorro, Don Diego. There's Antonio Banderas plays a different character.
That's correct. And he is a Spanish-born, so he's, the top of the pile. He's a peninsulare.
Yeah, and that's going to be a real problem because he specifically addresses the evil governor by his name.
Right.
And I'm assuming that's how he recognizes that Don Diego is Zorro, because these upper-class twits all know each other.
That's right. Well, that's right. And so... Essentially, what he's doing is he's fighting on behalf of the Mexican people against the cruel tyranny of the local governor in Los Californias, which is a very specific region.
Well, it's quote-unquote Southern California, but it's the part of California that borders Mexico, right?
Well, at this point, it is Mexico.
Right.
At this point, I mean, throughout the entire movie, it's Mexico. The Americans get involved because of a gold plot, which... is about right, actually, for the historical period.
Yeah, there's some guy I'm pretty sure is an American military officer. We'll get to him later, who's just sort of acting like a thug for the Dons. I mean, who knows what scheme he's doing.
You mean Captain Love, which is not a porn name at all?
That's right.
The prisoners are saved. The boys at one point drop a giant stone angel on some Mexican soldiers. Well, they're Spanish soldiers who are about to shoot Zorro.
That's right.
Yep.
Because you can only get away with swords and bullwhips so much, even in an age of muzzle loaders.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives one of the kids a medallion before he leaves.
All of this...
Dun, 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 dun.
Well, I mean, you do that, but it's well-constructed script stuff, right? Like, it's how he identifies him later. There's nothing that says you... I mean, because it would be absurd that... What is it? The Mexican-American War is the 1848. So we're talking some 20 years later. 27 years later. There's no way you'd recognize this kid again.
Yeah, Chekhov's amulet.
It's not even. It doesn't need the third act. It comes back to me. Like, it's a very tight script. And again, it's funny that this is Martin Campbell, because this is GoldenEye, right? Because at the beginning of GoldenEye, you have that setup on the dam, and then he screws over Trevelyan, and then we cut to a few years later. It's great.
With one of the old school Russian generals in GoldenEye, and in this case, it's one of the old school Spanish dons.
That's right. But it is what it is. Like, we then cut to, like, your home scene, right? We have to then give him a reason to keep fighting. So we have Family Annihilator Don Raphael this time. They show up. We're introduced to his child, Esmeralda?
Elena.
Yeah, Esperanza's the mom. Elena's the daughter.
Right.
There we go.
And it turns out there was some drama going on beforehand because he shows up like, I am sorry I could not love you like you wanted, and I'm sorry I'm going to have to arrest your husband for treason.
Yeah. So we have a kind of a unrequited love thing going on.
I just love the fact that Ren of Ren and Stimpy joined us just a second ago.
That's right.
You idiot.
Well, there is a you idiot moment. One of the guys accidentally shoots Esperanza, so he guts him.
Yep.
Oh, dude. I will say, too, like, I love this. It screams very much. There's this, I don't know, like, I've been rereading. I reread recently Sir Gawain and the Green Knight because I saw that incredible Green Knight movie, right? It does feel very, like, courtly love, very, like, knights and chivalry. Ah. Like, your beef is between you and me, old man. You got my wife involved. And so he kills the dude, even though they're on the same. Like, it does. It feels very much like a code of honor, which I totally dig on.
I love how you used Courtney Love as the example of chivalry.
Yes, Courtney Love. Yeah, good, well done.
Yeah, and so in a display of being a real dick, he's like, I'm not going to kill you. I'm going to let you live a nice long time knowing I'm going to raise your daughter as because she should have been mine.
Pretty much. What's interesting, too, which the movie also pays off, how the fuck does Raphael get away with this? Right? Because the idea is Don Diego de la Vega is a Spanish-born noble. These are people who aren't supposed to fuck with each other. So when we cut back later, it turns out that Raphael is also a disgrace now. So he did do the wrong thing and gets punished for it because he's kicked out of Spain.
I figure in all the hubbub, you know, it's easy to get away with something.
Well,
that guy's kind of a dick. Maybe he did something else.
Well, yeah, I agree, but luckily they don't over-explain it. It's just good to see that the villain is disgraced. It means that he is the bad guy no matter what, which, unlike Wild Wild West, was like, turns out the French and the English, they're all on my side, and I'm not even going to try to do Kenneth Branagh's impression there.
Don't you just play that song.
Oh, God help me. Is that the worst thing he's done? I mean, he directed Thor 2, and that's pretty bad.
Performance-wise, I think that's the worst thing he's ever done.
I am Don Raphael Montero of Alta California.
I mean, Wild Wild West was the same year, 1998?
No, it's the next year, but this does...
But I'll tell you, Zorro versus Jim West... I'd watch that movie. Watch him kick Jim West's
well,
ass.
They wouldn't fight very long. They'd figure out they're on the same side real quick.
Wouldn't be. He's Mexican. James West is an American. An American fighting in Texas. That's
yeah, but that's like 40... Of course, 40 years later, Don Diego would be really old.
There is a comic out there of Zorro and Django.
In production.
Wait,
according
they're making that
IMDb,
into a movie?
It's in pre-production.
No.
Django from Django and Chain and Zorro team up. That's the currently the only Zorro property in production.
I don't know what to do with this information.
I would watch it. And apparently, where is it going? I'm going to see if I can find it really quick. Okay, several years after the events of Django Unchained, Django meets Don Diego de la Vega, the famed Zorro, and agrees to become his bodyguard on a mission to free local aboriginal population that is enslaved. That's a movie! Yeah. I'm there! Dude, I am so there! Yeah. From here, we're introduced to, Anthony Hopkins is taken to prison, right? At this point, we're then kind of smashed-cutted to the Muerta brothers, Alejandro and Joaquin Muerta.
Yeah, it's yes. Antonio Banderas and some guy.
And another guy.
An Anglo guy this time.
Oh, the four-finger Jack?
Three-finger Jack.
Three-finger.
Well, and his brother, Alejandro.
Yes.
Right. So Alejandro and Joaquin are chained together while Three-finger Jack is being an asshole to them.
He makes them sing songs.
Yeah, to which he's made up the lyrics about how great he is. They get to essentially what's like a Mexican army outpost to turn him in for the bounty. And they are disgusted that they're only worth 200 pesos together.
This is a ripoff of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. It's the same scam.
100%. I dig it, too, because this is a reference, but they don't care about the reference. They don't spend time on it. It's a joke if you get it. If it's not, if you don't get it, it doesn't matter because the whole bit is over in about 45 seconds, right? They turn out that they're not actually tied up. They're tied up with some sort of slipknot. So they escape, and they immediately capture the other soldiers, stripping them naked and tying them face in towards a cactus, which is pretty great. Then donning the enemy uniforms, they escape with the bounty money from town to town. I mean, like, this is any other... Essentially, at this point, it looks like we're about to start a really great outlaw movie. Like, this could be a Jesse James character, a Billy the Kid character... Except, as you mentioned already, Captain Harrison Love shows up immediately and fucking shoots everyone.
Yeah, like, he's like young General Custer with his glorious blonde mullet.
Oh, yeah. This gentleman's hair, I don't know how this was ever regulation in the U.S. Army.
Oh, this is the wiggiest wig you've ever wigged. I will say that, too.
Cheater.
Yeah, doesn't count. By the way, in case you're curious, Harrison Love is a real human being. He's a real dude, and he really is known for capturing a guy named Joaquin Muerta. Like, that's a real historical thing. Because, again, they did their research.
Are you sure you're not just describing a 70s porn film?
I know. And he was part of the American Territorial California Rangers. So, like, all of this is accurate. I know. And then Burt Reynolds, they're filming, like, yeah. Keep going. Yeah. You got this scene.
Hardest Talrack right now.
I rewatched that movie recently. Still fantastic.
Boy.
It's a great movie, Boogie Nights.
Well.
Anyway, so Matera, essentially, Love shoots Three Finger Jack. He shoots Joaquin. No, Joaquin takes his own gun out and shoots himself.
But he'd already been injured, I think. So yes. he got him at least once.
Yeah, he got hit through the leg or something. So he pulls out the gun, kills himself. And then Alejandro escapes, essentially, right? We find out that Love is nuts. He cuts the guy's head off. And we see him carrying it off in a bag.
Which we see again later, Chekhov's head.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, where...
Is it a wine pitcher?
Something like that, yeah.
Dude, and by the by, that's one of the most badass things I've ever seen, which is that then, you know, essentially, what does he go by in this? Not De La Vega. What does the young guy call himself?
Alejandro?
No, but he gives himself a Spanish name.
Are you talking about Antonio Banderas?
Okay, yeah, Alejandro Muerta. I thought he gave himself a fake name, but whatever. Adela Muerta then drinks wine out of his own brother's skull. Like, it's pretty badass. He's like, you know what? If I'm going to play this game, I'm going to play to the end. Fucking awesome. Fucking awesome. By the way, also, fuck Shrek. Because I realize this is just Puss in Boots' character. A decade, not even a decade, 5 years later, 3 years later?
No, it was about a decade later, but you're right.
No, I thought Shrek was 2000. This is 98, and he appears in the second one. Yeah, Shrek, Puss in Boots is in Shrek 2, I thought.
Yeah, he is in Shrek 2, because he's hired by Fiona's dad to kill Shrek.
Okay, so 6 years later, then.
Yeah, so it's the year after the sequel to this. Ugh, gross.
There was a sequel to this?
Yeah, it's called The Return of Zorro or something. No, The Mark of Zorro, The Return of Zorro, The Return of Zorro.
It's this once a funny business in California soon after the U.S. annexes it.
Yeah, The Legend of Zorro, 2005. 2005, there you go.
So a year after Shrek 2.
A year after Shrek 2. Everyone returns except for Anthony Hopkins, who knew better.
Well, he died at the end of this movie.
Well, yeah, but they're still like... It's like Highlander 2. Sean Connery came back anyway. You know, you could figure out a way to make it work.
I'm just here for a paycheck.
That's true.
I'm just here to flirt with everyone.
I'm here to finish my garage, you see. Anthony Hopkins. At least when he's not being Hannibal Lecter.
I say he's a classy guy even when he's Hannibal
Lecter. Isn't Hannibal Lecter supposed to be classy?
Yeah.
Well, he does eat people.
To the sound of violins. Yeah, did Jeffrey Dahmer eat people with Chianti? Probably.
No.
With McDonald's French fries.
And maybe a Bud Light.
No, he ate a lot of Bud Light. The man had to be blackout drunk to do anything.
He was.
Yeah. He also worked in a chocolate factory the whole time. So.
Yeah.
And people say we need less inspection of our food. I'm sorry.
He never, like, put people in chocolate.
No, he didn't. But can you imagine how bad he smelled when he came to work? Can you imagine?
Well, I do know that he had, like, a skull in his, like, work locker, so...
He did have a skull in his work locker, yes.
Really so, unpleasant gentleman was Dahmer.
Yeah, so, essentially, the last time we see De La Vega, his house is burning to the ground, the kids are being taken, right? Then we kind of revisit him after this scene with Muerta, where... Don Rafael is returning. We don't know exactly why yet, but he goes to this prison and he's looking at all the elderly inmates to see if any of them look like Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, the Spartacus scene.
The Spartacus scene, exactly.
I am Zorro. They took my mask.
Yeah, my favorite is the black guy who says he's Zorro, and Rafael just shakes his head. It's good. But he does see Anthony Hopkins there, who is acting like he's a deaf mute, essentially, also blind, but he's just playing possum for whatever 20 years and is totally just fine.
So, Nick, are you saying he is a deaf, dumb, and blind boy who is in a quiet vibration land?
That's exactly right.
And he sure plays a mean pinball.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. He escapes by pretending to die, effectively, punching out a guard. Switching places with another prisoner and being tossed out with the garbage, effectively. Which, I don't know why he waited till now. Maybe it was the fact that Don Rafael showed back up. I don't know. But he's then wandering through the town square when he runs into Antonio Banderas desperately trying to crawl into a bottle.
He is willing to trade Zorro's medallion for whiskey.
And Zorro takes offense.
Yes.
Well, and he goes... I wouldn't give away that piece of metal for one drink. And he goes, what, do you think it's worth two? Which is funny. It's funny. I will say, maybe, I don't know what the script looked like for this, but I will say Martin Campbell directing it like very James Bond-y helps. Because what do you need? You need a seductive dance scene. That screams Bond movie. You need quippy one-liners. That screams Bond movie, right? Like, you need a villain who's villainous and a number two who's somehow harder to fight. That sounds Bondy. Like, it's structured like a good Bond movie.
Yeah.
And I mean, the difference is, much like a Casino Royale, we get the training sequence here. Like, he is not a Mary Sue. We see him learn how to become... Because what he wants to do right here is he sees Captain Love across the way on a horse, and he's like, I'm going to kill this son of a bitch. And essentially, with his walking stick... Anthony Hopkins not only disables him, but pins him.
You would have fought very bravely, but not for very long.
That's right.
Yes.
And essentially what Anthony Hopkins says, I saved your life, you dumb motherfucker. Like, because you go in once like a drunk asshole, and that's kind of it. You're dead. Which is cool. It's nice. It's a nice little thing.
And then we have the training montage.
I believe what we actually have next is Don Rafael landing and announcing his interest in coming to California. He introduces himself to the Dons like it's Godfather 3.
He is more obsessed with California than the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
And he brings along with him all grown up Elena, played by Catherine Zeta-Jones.
And this is our introduction to her as... You know, whatever, 21-year-old, 20-something.
And that's when Anthony Hopkins decides not to shank him.
Right, because essentially there's this crowd of people who've been paid to stand there to cheer for him when he comes back. And Anthony Hopkins is just among them with a knife. Like, his master plan is to die by police.
Yeah.
Suicide by cop. Because he's not going to get past a couple good stabs in. But then he sees Elena, the grand reveal. So he kind of falls back.
Who we later see in a nightgown, which is why this movie is good.
Yeah, no. I mean, I will say, while recording this, we just talked about Charlie's Angels. Charlie's Angels is fine and all. Very sexy. This is the horniest movie I've ever seen. It is so, it's a lot. It's great.
Well, this was organically horny. I mean, it wasn't trying to be like, hey, you should be horny because we're showing Catherine Zeta-Jones. Her and Antonio Banderas had great chemistry together.
Yeah, but I mean, again, it's like a Bond movie. Like, it's like a Xenia scene or something. Like, she's dangerous and she's sexy and there's an attraction. Although he is much more bumbling than they ever allow Pierce Brosnan to be.
And he cuts off her nightgown.
Yeah, we'll get there. But yeah, so essentially they have two simultaneous, in I guess what's a scene very much akin to a Batman and Robin, right? Like in that horrible, well, horrible, that fun but shitty Batman Forever, which is that Robin wants to kill the guy who wronged his family, and Batman's kind of helping him but doesn't. It's like, you got to pick your moment, kid.
Well, it's more Batman Beyond than Batman Forever.
Fair, fair. But still, like, that's kind of the idea. And then Alejandro decides to go to the Batcave and learn how to be Batman.
Although in this case, it's the fox's den or the fox's lair. Because
Zorro is Spanish for fox.
Yes.
Right. But it is. It's very much a Batcave. It is a cave filled with foxes. The night my parents were killed, I was bitten by a fox. And ever since then, I have been the fox.
Why, what? Nick, I didn't know you were a furry now.
What does the fox say?
We also have a scene now where he's the horse whisperer. A scene wherein there's another horse that looks like Zorro's traditional horse, which is Tornado.
Tornado.
Yeah. And there's another black Appaloosa, right?
Andalusian.
Andalusian, thank you. And, you know, he breaks free, and then he decides he must, in fact, steal it to rescue it. Wrapped around the horse's front hoof is, like, a woman's scarf. And so he makes his own, his very own Zorro mask, Alejandro does, before he is prepared.
Yeah, and so he eventually sneaks into the governor's compound to steal a horse, and he runs into Elena, who must have read too many social bandit romances, because she doesn't think of him as a problem at all. I think, in fact, she's turned on by him.
Oh, yeah, dude, she's totally seduced by Antonio Banderas, which all of us were by the end of that. Antonio's a good-looking dude.
Saturday Night Live made fun of that.
Oh, I mean, he did. Should I unbutton yet another button? Oh, no, it is too sexy, Antonio. But I must. Oh, dude. It's one of the best bits. Chris Kattan, I think? No one should remember that career.
And so he tries to steal a horse and makes an absolute mess of it and ends up having to fight like 30 Mexican soldiers.
Yeah, it's a good fight scene. It's a very much like, he is never in charge of this fight. He's always kind of behind the eight ball, but he's quick and he's crafty and manages to get away. But in what would be a crappy, easy movie, the horse doesn't give a shit about him. Right, like he jumps on his back, the horse bucks and throws him, which lets the guards know he's there. And then eventually he breaks out of the crowd, he's about to escape, he gets on the horse jumps through this kind of mesh wall and knocks him off onto his ass again. Very funny.
And then there's involving some gunpowder.
Yes, he does accidentally blow up this entire barracks.
And there's really this 7 foot tall who he has to beat, basically beats into submission with a cannonball.
It's literally Jaws shows up from a Bond movie, and he takes two cannonballs and slams them together against this guy's teeth. Like, 8 times, he spits out his teeth and loses consciousness.
Oh, boy. Which, woo! How is this not a Robert Rodriguez movie? Because that's a Robert Rodriguez scene.
I told you he almost directed it. I wonder if he didn't stick around, like, if there's not, like, a secret producer's credit or something. Because, like...
What was he doing at this time? The Faculty with Jon Stewart?
Oh, God.
Stay tuned?
Well, hey, yes, 100% stay tuned. But, like, I'm trying to think. What would be this year? This is 98. I mean, El Mariachi's around here. No, El Mariachi's 92. Yeah. Dusk Till Dawn is 96.
Oh, there you go.
So it would be The Faculty, then it would be Spy Kids, We already did Spy Kids and From Dusk Till Dawn. So 99, there's two Dusk Till Dawn sequels that he had nothing to do with other than make money. But yeah, so yeah, I don't know why they didn't choose him for this, but you don't complain about Martin Campbell in this. So anyway, he now has a horse. Anthony Hopkins was like, well, that was fucking stupid. And he goes, yes, it was, but look at this horse. But essentially he goes, that was dumb. You're never allowed to do anything again. And he goes, well, you're just an old man. You're not going to get anything done. So De La Vega essentially challenges him to a duel.
With a spoon.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. And Alejandro pulls a sword. He pulls a spoon. And he goes, look, if you want to play the game, we have to do the romantic Bond scene now. And he goes, what? He goes, yeah, you know, like Mission Possible.
I thought he was just referencing the Tick. Spoon!
Can you imagine? Can you imagine if Anthony Hopkins gave a throaty spoon?
I can, and it would be glorious.
Is this when he infiltrates the Don's dinner?
It's exactly when he infiltrates the Don's dinner. And this is the whole, like, we have the tango scene for no reason. We have the, you know, the poor, pretty terrible scene for no reason, which is great. I mean, he essentially comes into the villain's good graces. And then charms the hell out of Elena with this, you know, with a tango.
Yes.
We have a great tango scene.
It is their most passionate dance. It makes sex look like a church.
So it's the tango de la muerte?
You are pregnant now. But how? It is the mystery of the dance. The Simpsons. But yes, so essentially he seduces Elena. But he keeps talking, you know, really kind of conservative, noble style politics. Like, these people are beneath us. We should rule them. They are peasants to us, yada, yada, yada. And Elena is, you know, very, you know, liberal minded. Like, no, they're people. They should get to vote. They should be independent. And he goes, ah, she's just a woman. And everyone, and all the old men laugh at the table, yada, yada, yada. So she's torn between this young, handsome man who seduced her and this kind of, you know, old fuddy-duddy conservative type that she can't. And, I mean, again, it's Anthony Hopkins has trained him well, which is it's great.
Oh, I mentioned Anthony Hopkins is in disguise as his servant.
His servant,
and he's kind of skulking around the mansion. And at one point knocks out a soldier with his drink.
Yeah, exactly.
Is this where he also talks to his daughter and is like, I haven't been to Spain since before you were born.
Yeah, I think that's later.
No, it's part of the same sequence. The next scene, though, is Alejandro going in and finding out Rafael's plan, which is to essentially buy what is now California from Santa Anna in order to make it the independent republic of California, wherein, in, like, I guess, true, quote-unquote, like, you know, small-R Republican fashion, it would be ruled by a few families, right, acting in a Senate.
Now, we skipped over a big scene here before, you know, the deception with Antonio Banderas as a Don.
Yeah.
And that's a scene in the church where he hears Catherine Zeta-Jones'
yes.
confession.
At one point, I went up to use the restroom when I was watching this. And I was watching this with my wife, and she paused it, and she goes, you guys are going to want to talk about this in the yeah. movie. You have to watch this. So in a scene right out of, I don't know, Daredevil? What other movies have we done that has a confessional
scene?
Well,
in Desperado, you know, bless me, Father, if I have sinned, I've killed a man, as Stevie Sammy. You're damn right you did.
Yes.
Yeah. Also Antonio Banderas, right? Desperado?
Yeah, Desperado.
Yes.
But yeah, so essentially, after escaping with this horse nonsense, he ends up hiding in the church. And the priest who...
Zorro! I remember you!
Sure, old man. Why not?
Yeah, there was a friar in the crowd in the beginning of the movie, so now he's just gotten old. Yeah.
Well, and in fact, if I recall correctly, the friar also knew the kids.
Yeah.
So he does know the guy. And he hides him in the confessional. Just as the Mexican army comes in.
And then Catherine Zeta-Jones goes to confess that she had dishonored her father by lusting after the dude breaking into their house.
And he goes, go on.
Tell me more, my child.
He goes,
it's too sexy!
But I must.
It is. I mean, but he goes like, she goes, you have, I've broken the fourth commandment. And he goes,
you killed someone?
And he goes, no, the fourth commandment. And he goes, what have you done to break this most of the important of the commandments? And he goes, I dishonored my father. He goes, that's not so bad.
That's right.
Can't you come? 3 days! Could you come back when you've sinned a little more? It's fucking funny, man. And again, it's, I don't know, I mean, Antonio Banderas is a funny guy. I believe it. I 100% he can deliver those lines so smoothly. But the direction in this is really good.
I just like the aftermath when Catherine Zeta-Jones leaves the confessional and he's like, I was confessing. To whom? The priest is here.
And she goes, oh. I mean, and then they just open fire in this confessional, which is really something. Which is really... And then they open the door and he's not there. And
yeah, well, he slashed the opening. Well... I guess the roof or the ceiling.
Yeah, this one was covered. This one wasn't all wood. It was covered in like a velvet cloth.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So he cuts it and he gets out the top. And but it's still it's great. I do like the idea that he's like taking the confession and he's like saying our father or something and get out of it. Like it's funny. That's a world class scene. Essentially, we get that the plan is to get gold. So where are you getting all this gold from?
A mine that Santa Ana doesn't know about.
So what they do is, early the next morning, we go to this mine in a place where there's not gold, but Southern California.
It's basically the Don's little gulag.
That's exactly what it is. At one point, even Alejandro asks him, so where are you getting all this labor from? And he goes, we just take people, essentially. And this is the American he's talking to. This is love, right? And they've set up these mines, to get gold out of the ground. And what they're doing is they're getting the gold out, and they're stamping it with Spanish marks. So they think they're getting it from Spain, but they're not. They're actually stealing it from Santa Ana's own gold mines, effectively. He just doesn't realize it because at this point, since we've jumped ahead 20 years, at this point, he's dealing with, as historians, the Bear Flag Revolt, which is the California Revolt, which Harrison Love alludes to, and the Texas Republic, and what's about to be the Mexican-American War. The Americans have not attacked yet, but they're about to, essentially, is what we're told. I mean, and again, all of this stuff is historically accurate. The Americans really were squatting on California land, and they really had seized Texas, vaguely, legally. The Texicans, as they were called, really did just kind of take the land, and they took advantage of a young nation, and yada,
now,
yada, yada.
How many years was Texas its own independent republic?
I think about 10 years.
Okay.
If you go to London, there's even still an embassy. Now it's the Belgian embassy, but if you go, there's still a gold plaque outside that says Embassy of the Republic of Texas. They just keep it up for historical purposes.
Huh.
Because if anyone loves artifacts more than the Americans, it's the British.
Well, only so long as it involves the English.
That's
true. I mean,
the
Scottish and the Irish, forget it.
Well, I will say, the best joke I heard is, why are the pyramids in Egypt? And the answer is, well, because they were too heavy to end up in the British Museum.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But yeah, so
and Three Finger Jack is still alive.
Yes, and at this point, this is when we're reintroduced to him. Three Finger Jack has been working at the mines, presumably for the last year or so, however many months it's been since the introduction, and he goes on a mine cart roller coaster, flings himself off the edge with a pickaxe,
and then
Love shoots him out of the sky like he's a goddamn duck. I don't know. It's the craziest scene in this movie.
Oh, I totally saw the dog, you know, in the background afterwards.
Yeah.
And that's a clue in Love that Alejandro's a fake.
Well, because he's interested to see this man. He essentially turns him over and looks at this, and he goes, a rich person would never care about a poor. I guess. I don't know. But I will say, for this character actor whose name I have no idea, Three Finger Jack.
Oh, he looks like Chris Christopherson.
He looks exactly like he looks like Chris Christopherson halfway to Sam Elliott. But he flips him over and sees who it is and kind of chuckles to himself before he dies, which is great. I don't know whose idea that was, but fucking perfect, right? It's great. He's like, son of a bitch. I mean, I would be lucky if that was my last thought. You son of a bitch. But yes, you're right. This is where Love looks at him and goes, maybe. We don't know what it is. Maybe it's that who could possibly care about this poor person? Because he's also the one who asks, like, where are you going to get these people from? And he goes, we just get who we want. But there is this kind of, like, this disgust that he didn't expect that none of the other Dons show because the nobility is terrible. Right, again, like, it's social banditry, like the Robin Hood mentality. Like, all these rich pricks, does no one care for these people? Well, one person does. And in order for a rich person to care about a poor person, he has to disguise his identity, whether it be Bruce Wayne or whatever.
Yeah, and so then Love kind of makes him an offer he can't refuse to come to the Hacienda, and that's when we get the preserved head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say, too, like, all of this part, pretty much from now to the end, is action. The last 30 minutes of this movie is pretty fucking tight. It's awesome. Right? So, yeah, we get... he goes, you know, come meet me back when we get to the Hacienda. And he goes, I would rather not. You kind of creep me out. And he goes, no, you're going to come meet me.
Well, you're talking about this as a Bond movie, and we get a ton of Bond scenes throughout. The big bad Don Raphael explaining how he's going to take over California is exactly the same scene in Goldfinger as how Goldfinger's going to, you know, neutralize Fort Knox. And then we've got the sword fight dance scene between Elena and Antonio Banderas, which, if I may say, makes sex look like a church.
Yeah, I mean, but it's also like, how do I put it? It feels like a Bond scene because it's not just that they're dancing. It's that it's sexual. It's the most violent
foreplay I've ever seen. And it's still foreplay.
And it's foreshadowed because Zorro had told Alejandro, don't fight angry. And that's when Jones starts losing and she starts yelling and flailing at him rather than fighting competently.
Well, I mean, you're talking about their fight. We're talking about them dancing.
The dance was earlier. That was
before. That's what he was just talking about, though.
Yeah.
So two rounds of foreplay then.
You know what? Matt's right, though. I mean, there is a lot of parallels between those two scenes.
Well, but that's what we were kind of like tagging up to right around here. At least we can jump here too, which is that at this point, Antonio Banderas actually gets to dress as Zorro. He gets the hat, he gets the mask, and he is going to kind of launch this raid because the other plot, the B plot that we haven't really talked about is. You mentioned Anthony Hopkins talks to Elena, right? Mm-hmm. The real Don De La Vega talks to her and it's like, you look like your mother. And he goes, how do you know that? He goes, well, you don't look like your father.
Yeah.
Essentially, is his line. And she starts getting this in the head like, well, does he know my mother?
And then
they go to the marketplace. And that old lady's like, you look like Elena De La Vega. I don't know who you think you are.
I was your nanny, and I hung fresh flowers over your crib.
Right, and that was the thing where she like, this flower smells familiar to me, and he goes, that's impossible. This only grows here in California. Yada yada yada. I don't know. At this point, she's kind of sort of convinced it's him. Now let's Zorro a little bit. Zorro fights everyone. He steals the map. Using his sword as a grappling hook, right? He stabs down, takes it up. Pretty great.
Yeah, and then he manages to go get these two Mexican soldiers to bend over and kick them out the window.
Yeah.
And sword fights Love and Montero at the same time.
Yes. Which is a great scene.
Yeah, no, it is. So Zorro essentially then tries to escape, ends up in the stables, and this is when he fights Elena. Elena tries to take the map back from him. Right.
And he cuts off her nightgown.
If I may quote Wikipedia here, because it's the best. Elena attempts to retrieve Montero's map from the swordsman. A brief but erotic sword duel ensues, and Zorro gives her a passionate kiss before he flees.
Yeah, every time they clinch, come to like a blade lock, he kisses her, and she just gets more and more pissed off at him.
Which, again, don't fight angry, right? Don't. But I will say, as someone who fenced in college... I fought FA
you
mostly.
You kissed your opponents?
No. But I will say, these fights look excellent. The sword fights look really, really good. And, for example, I love Lord of the Rings. Just rewatched Fellowship. Just rewatched Two Towers. Those are big, fucking heavy swords, right? And so when you got Aragorn lifting it up and swinging, it's a fucking 15-pound sword that he's swinging around. So it's a lot of upper body strength, and there's not a lot of agility there because you're essentially using the weight of the sword to cleave. This stuff, sexy as fuck. It's very light. It's very dainty. It's very skill-based. It's awesome. And, like, it's something that the prequels in Star Wars and the sequels in Star Wars, with the exception of that really one fucking incredible fight with the Red Guard, they never got right because a lightsaber should not have any weight because it's made out of a laser. Every director directs them differently. It doesn't really feel like anything. This, the sword fucking works, and it's awesome.
At least in Star Wars, they were borrowing from Akira Kurosawa's samurai movies.
Yes, but Akira Kurosawa, when he filmed those, gave them metal swords, so they cling, clang, cling, clanged against each other. In Star Wars, they were essentially using a mixture of broomsticks and glass tubes, so like they didn't ever hit the same way twice. That's why this is cool, because the swords have weight, and they're actually fucking hitting him. It's cool. Then when he finally disarms her, he just goes, ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. And then he like kind of holds his finger for a second, then ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. And then her shirt just falls away. It's a punchline.
Her torso's covered by her hair.
Of course. I mean, she does like the mermaid pose, for lack of a better term. But it's just, she is so pissed off, so offended, and it's hilarious. And then she goes, ah! And grabs his hat, right, and covers her breast with his hat. And he gives his little goodbye speech, yada, yada, yada.
And then he takes his hat back.
And he goes, sorry, my hat. And then takes it from her, and she gasps. Like, funny as hell. Excellent. And then, of course, the dad comes, and he goes, he's going that way. Like, she's so upset.
He was vigorous, father.
He was vigorous. Yeah. Yeah. At this point, to bury the evidence, because they now know Zorro or whoever knows. I
at some point, Anthony Hopkins had set a giant flaming Z in the hill outside the ranch.
He was just drunk and peed on the side.
Peeing gasoline.
Yeah.
We're talking about Anthony Hopkins, not Peter O'Toole. Let's be clear here.
Yeah. Or Albert Finney, I think, could have also pulled that off.
Oh, you know who could have pulled it off is Oliver Reed.
Yeah. I mean, so there's this giant Z on the hilltop, and he goes, my God, the bat signal. I mean, the Z. So he's like, oh, shit, Zorro knows what's up. Let's just murder all the miners. Let's just fucking kill everyone.
Well, that was Captain Love's idea. It's like, destroy the evidence that we're stealing from Santa Ana.
Yeah, even Montero, forever just a dick he is, even he was like, what?
Yes, but he also doesn't try to stop Love. Let's be very clear here. He's like, well, I mean, it was your idea, so slightly more of the blood is on your hands. So the finale here is them trying to prevent the explosives from going off, right?
To bury the mine, yeah.
And essentially, the people who you want to win,
yeah,
right?
Meanwhile, Anthony Hopkins makes a grab for Elena, and Montero tries to convince her that this is some insane man who's lost his daughter is trying to kidnap her.
Yeah.
But he manages to pull
out a confession.
Yeah, enough that she brains one of Dad's soldiers and breaks him out.
That's right. And, I mean, Love eventually is actually killed by Banderas, by Alejandro.
As you might say, it's super dead because he shoves a sword through him and then drops like a thousand pounds of gold on him.
Dude, you double check to make sure that man's dead. He is double dead. It is. It's a death out of a silly movie. It's the Nazi. The Nazi in the tank in Indiana Jones where it goes off the cliff and he's like,
oh, yeah, that's right.
At some point, yeah, Hopkins and Montero fight, and then I think Hopkins ties Montero to a wagon and it rolls him down off a cliff.
Oh, dude, yeah. He dies, again, in a falling death. Like,
Is Disney involved somehow?
Yeah. Right? The wagon just kind of slowly starts just picking up speed and just... we should also mention by that point, Hopkins is mortally wounded.
Yeah, because he was going to kill Montero, and then Elena stops him, then Montero momentarily takes her hostage, then shoots him, and He's the old school Zorro, so he can't die that easily.
No. But he essentially fights the last, kills his mortal enemy, the one who killed his wife, and now his daughter, in love with the new Zorro. They live happily ever after. And, I mean, you want to talk about a Disney ending. It is funny where he's telling his son the story of Zorro. Catherine Zeta-Jones is like, oh, son of a bitch, he's telling the story again. But it's all very sweet. But the ending frame where you have the hacienda and you have the columns ending up into a starlit night, it's literally the end of a Disney movie, right? They might as well sing the end of the song, a whole new world, like the reprise at the end. But the son is named Joaquin in honor of his dead brother, and he's telling the heroic deeds of Zorro. Movie's fucking great.
Yeah.
Matt, final thoughts.
Yeah, this is pretty fun. I'd recommend go seeing it.
I think Roger Ebert had the best description of this movie imaginable. It's got swashes and buckles.
There you go.
It's a great movie. It's a lot of fun. I think it deserves more attention than it gets. I really can't think of anything bad to say about it, which is rare for me. So go check it out.
And it's funny, so the only point of reference I have on this, and I think, Matt, you were on this episode, but we did Three Musketeers.
Yeah.
And, Three Musketeers is...
Oh, we did Man in the... I was on Man in the Iron
Mask.
Man
in the Iron Mask, excuse me, that's right. We did Man in the Iron Mask. And it's fine, but there's only, one Frenchman among them, right? It's Gerard Depardieu is in it. And everyone else is an American or an Englishman. And, the costumes are weird. Everything's kind of period, mishy-mashy, inappropriate. Everything's kind of swishy. This is the opposite. With the exception of Anthony Hopkins and Catherine Zeta-Jones, everyone is Hispanic or Mexican.
Yeah, and Catherine Zeta-Jones at least can make it work. I mean, Anthony Hopkins is Anthony Hopkins.
Well, but they put on proper accents. The clothing is period appropriate. Everything looks right. They don't have magic super guns. Everyone has proper sidearms and swords and guns. They did their research. The history lines up. For a movie that could have been just a stupid action movie, they did their homework, which is why I think it's better than people give it credit for. And I know we will probably do the sequel and I'll be disappointed. And I know we'll do probably other indie, period pieces like The Three Musketeers. It's a shame that there's only one good one of these, because you could have made this a trilogy and I would have been there for it. I don't know why it took them 7 years to make a sequel to this or whatever, because this movie was so good. Why didn't they immediately start doing a sequel right then? It cost $95 million. It made $400
million. Good Lord.
In 1998 bucks. Whatever. I mean, when you're in 1998, that was the year Titanic made $1 billion, though. So, Jim Cameron ruins everything.
Yep, he sure does.
Stay tuned for Avatar, which will never come out. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening, subscribing. Thanks for doing this with us. Thanks for being you. I don't know exactly when this is coming out, but I assume there'll be something else out, because we never stop doing this. We're in our 8th season, and I don't know if I could watch a movie without doing a podcast on it. Thanks, guys.
Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. Mission Briefing is hosted by John Copsey. Podcasts are edited by Daniel Settis, and Patreon is edited by Nick Hoffman. Our engineer is Nick Hoffman. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from Incomptech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.